Prince make it yesterday. And David's chipped in here on the SMS saying, rort for the quiz. 100% right, 100% right, yeah.
Kind of.
Marina Goh, chairperson of the West Tigers, up after the news.
Police are among the authorities denying a 7-year-old Australian boy missing after the Barcelona terror attack has been found. Spanish newspaper El Mundo had reported on Saturday afternoon local time that Julian Cadman had been found at a hospital in Barcelona, citing a source within the Catalan police. However, this was followed by denials from the Catalan force and British authorities. Sydney boy Julian became separated from his seriously injured mother, Jom, when a van ploughed into crowds in the city's busy Las Ramblas district on Friday. The boy's father, Andrew, has arrived in Spain. Meanwhile, police are still trying to determine whether two other suspected Islamist militants linked to the attack have died or are at large. The Spanish government said it considered it had dismantled the cell behind Thursday's rampage and an attack early on Friday in the seaside town of Cambrils. Police arrested four people in connection with the attacks in Barcelona and Cambrils. A woman was killed when a car rammed passers-by in Cambrils on Friday. Five attackers wearing fake explosive belts were also shot dead. Interior Minister Juan Ignacio Zoido.
It can be said that the terrorist cell in Barcelona has been dismantled because of so many dead, so many detained, and the identifications that are being carried out.
Finland's Prime Minister Juha Sipilä has urged his country to unite against hatred in the wake of the country's first terrorist attack. An 18-year-old has been arrested after going on a stabbing rampage in the Finnish city of Turku. Two women were killed and eight others injured. The BBC's Risto Pulkka has more details.
Police have given few details about the attacker other than saying he's 18 and a Moroccan national who's lived in Finland since 2016. They have also described him as a potential radical Islamist, saying the assault and his actions before it resembled other recent ones. But it was also markedly different in one way. The man only targeted women. The men he stabbed were ones that tried to stop him. Four other Moroccan men have been arrested in connection with the attack and an international search warrant has been issued for a fifth.
Back home, and Senator Nick Xenophon is the latest Australian politician caught up in the dual citizenship scandal. The crossbench senator confirms he is a British overseas citizen by descent as a result of his father emigrating to Australia from a British territory. Senator Xenophon will refer himself to the High Court, sitting as the Court of Disputed Returns, when Parliament resumes in 2 weeks' time. It comes after Deputy Nationals leader Fiona Nash revealed on Friday that she was a UK citizen by descent. She's the third member of Malcolm Turnbull's cabinet to be affected. A 49-year-old man has died after his car hit a tree stump during a club car rally in Tasmania. The accident occurred during one of the late stages of the rally on Forestry Roads near Scottsdale yesterday afternoon. Event organisers and other participants administered first aid until paramedics arrived, but the driver was pronounced dead at the scene. His 33-year-old navigator was taken to a Launceston hospital and is in a stable condition with suspected multiple fractures. Also in news, two men have died in a drag racing crash at Willowbank Raceway in Queensland. This is Air News. Australian rugby legend Michael Leiner has said Checker condemned the Wallabies' diabolical tackling after the All Blacks opened the rugby championship with a record-setting 54-34 walloping last night. The rampant world champions piled on six tries in the first half alone in racking up their highest total against Australia in 114 years of trans-Tasman test battles. North Queensland's NRL finals prospects took another hit while 5-8. Jamie Wincup was perhaps the luckiest man in the supercars field yesterday. Wincup was caught up in a bungle between Scott McLaughlin and Shane Van Gisbergen that left him with a ready-to-blow tyre and a crumpled car. With 14 laps remaining, Wincup had a marathon left but salvaged a podium finish with a stunning drive around Eastern Creek. Wincup held off Mark Winterbottom and other championship rivals despite a banged-up hood that was impeding his vision. Australia have trounced New Zealand 106-79 in the Asia Cup basketball semi-final to advance to the decider. The Boomers kept their unbeaten record intact after a blistering start, which saw them 22-2 ahead, from which point they were never threatened. The Aussies face three-time champions Iran in the final, while New Zealand play off South Korea for third place. In cricket, England beat West Indies by an innings and 209 runs in the opening test at Edgbaston. And in other results, wins to the Storm, Roosters and Sharks in NRL. In AFL, victories for Port Adelaide, Geelong, Greater Western Sydney, Essendon and Carlton. Australian Independent Radio News.
Don't whinge and whine about the traffic. Think of the wine you'll have at home. A glass of Windy Peak Pinot Grigio. By De Bortoli, of course. Here's the traffic.
Enjoy 20 to 50% off all furniture and homewares at Oz Design Furniture. Store-wide savings must end tomorrow. Visit ozdesignfurniture.com.au for store locations or shop online. We've got delays heading to the airport. It's heavy eastbound on the M5 East from Kingsgrove to Arncliffe and on Marsh Street as you approach the International Terminal. Elsewhere, we've got a nice run north to the central coast of the M1 and a clear run south out of the city on the Princes Highway. Hurry into snooze now and get a selected king, queen or double mattress and you only pay the price of a single. Hurry, ends this weekend. It's amazing what a little snooze can do. I'm Solomon Gates, number one in racing on Sky Sports Radio.
Sky Sports Radio, Sydney weather.
Mostly sunny, winds southwesterly 20 to 30 k's, turning south to southeasterly 15 to 25 k's in the late morning, then becoming light in the evening. None of those strong winds we've had the last couple of days. Mostly sunny day in Sydney today. 0% chance of any rain, heading for a top temperature of 17 degrees now. Jim, what about at Tempe and at Tibberborough?
Currently at Tempe, it is 7 degrees too. Expected max about 17 degrees. Tibberborough, though, Raymond, we've got the update there, and there's a possible late shower in the middle of the state. Can you believe that? Actually, it's not in the middle of the state. It's right up in the corner.
Yeah.
It's only in the middle of the country.
North. North New South Wales.
Yeah, northwest. Possible late shower, 18 degrees.
It's back at Bourke, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sky Sports Radio brings you every magical moment of Sydney's Spring Carnival. A key part of that is on Racing HQ's News Hour between 9 and 10am. New South Wales Racing Minister Paul Toole was one of the many guests this week.
One of the big game changers has been the country championships. Increase in prize money. This has been important in country areas.
Next week, you'll get daily updates on the Group 2 San Domenico, plus all the Country Cup action. Back Tuesday morning at 9. Racing HQ's News Hour, here on Sky Sports Radio.
Everyone knows a festival is only as good as its lineup, and this year, Volksfest 2017 boasts incredible deals across a wide range of Volkswagen models, like the new Amarok Core 4x4, tougher than ever, and yours from only $40,990 drive away, including impressive features like diff lock, app connect, and rear view camera. Don't miss out on this season of great deals during Volksfest 2017. Conditions at Volkswagen.com.au.
Caribbean Blaster. He blew his rivals apart in his Victoria Cup win. A current track record holder. A winner of the Chariots of Fire. 4-year-old Breeders' Crown and SA Car. Trainer Andy Gath says he was the perfect racehorse. Get the facts. Ask someone who has a Blaster. They have perfect gait and constitution. Perfect conformation and 100% toughness. Caribbean Blaster. Standing at Yerribee Stud in New South Wales. Visit yerribee.com.au. To the Big Sports Breakfast Weekend, brought to you by Penrith Mazda, the BT50 experts. More than 300 new Mazdas in stock over 5 acres at Mulgoa Road, Penrith.
Yeah, welcome back to the final hour of the program. It is a big hour. Marina Goh, very shortly, she's the chairperson of the West Tigers. Jason Witham, we'll have a chat with him, with Arrogate running over there in the US. We've got a sports update with Tanya. We've got Trent Lansgar from tab.com.au. And our legend of the game is the great Gregory Stephen Chappell. There's lots been happening in the world of rugby league, though, Raymond, so we better jump into this straight away. Marina Goh has been good enough to join us on the line now. She's the chairwoman of the West Tigers. Hello, Marina.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, really well. Thank you very much for your time. We do appreciate it. On behalf of the West Tigers, your thoughts on where the salary cap landed this week, of course, yet to be approved by the players,
yeah.
But $9.4 million with the amount agreed by the clubs and the NRL.
Yeah, look, I think as everyone knows, I mean, you know, our club was one of the clubs that was really pushing hard for the cap to remain at 9.2.
Mm.
And that's for good reason, because this is already, I mean, it was already a fantastic deal at 9.2. And essentially, it's, you know, it's a very big package for the game to afford. But we negotiated for some time And we realised that in the, it's in the best interest of the game that we gave some ground, which we did. Nine clubs gave ground on this, and we reached a compromise. Mm-hmm. But $9.4 million is the, it's the biggest salary deal in the game's history. It's a 52% increase year on year for the players. And, I don't know of any other industry that's offering their employees an increase of that scale. So, it looks like an extraordinary deal. And I think as a few of the chairmen were quoted as saying, it's a really great time to be a player in rugby league at the moment.
Yeah, good morning, Marina. Thanks for joining us. The Players Association is still, I guess, agitating for a little bit more. They want certain concessions, etc. This whole issue has been a bit like a chess game, so to speak. So what's the next move now, Marina?
Well, look, this is, one of the things that we were very clear on as a group was that this is really all we can afford. It's a very fair deal. One of the things that the, I guess, the base case, if you like, for the RLPA was that they wanted a share in revenue, which, again, was something that wasn't previously in place. And so this deal offers them that. I mean, it's a two-tiered deal. So, first of all, we've projected revenue, which is what we've worked out, the cap on. They get 29.5% of the game's revenue. Plus, we now have a second tier in place that they get 25% of any upside. And, that is an extraordinary opportunity for them because, as you may well know, the reputation of the game is largely determines any sponsorship upside. And any upside in our game will be with regards to other revenue other than broadcast deals. So I guess what we're saying is that we're all in this together. And if the game grows, which we all want the game to grow, then the players can share in that. But they're part of that growth. So I think it's an unbelievable deal. I don't know why they have a problem with it. I just can't understand why they would possibly have a problem with it.
Sometimes reputational damage can be done by things outside your control. So you have to be careful around what modelling you do around that. I also think it's a great time to be a club in rugby league, Marina, and that is if you start talking about the difference between the grant from the NRL and the cap as it stands now and to what it's going to be next year, it is a significant uptick for the clubs. Has there been any conditions by the NRL being placed on how they think that money should be spent by clubs? For example, would there be a football department cap?
Well, there's certainly discussion about that at the moment, and our CEO, Justin Pascoe, is a participant in that because, again, it's no secret that the West Tigers probably are certainly one of the clubs that spend the least in the football department just purely because we're watching, we're on a tighter budget than some of the other clubs. But at the moment, there are no specific conditions in place, but certainly the NRL is working towards a football cap, and it's about equity. We talk about the cap putting the game into an equity position and that's been fantastic for the game. But the football departments have been a bit of an arms race. And so there is certainly a massive difference. We're talking millions of dollars difference between the clubs that spend the most money and the clubs that spend the least money, like the West Tigers and the Manly Seagulls. And I think it does impact the outcome. And at the end of the year, my club has obviously been in the bottom half of the table for quite some time. Look, that's going to turn around, don't you worry. All of these things play into what is actually equitable for the game. Mm.
Marina, there's some positive signs for the Tigers. You're 100% right. Ivan Cleary doing some good things. But on a slightly different issue, Marina, where will Aaron Woods be playing next year?
Aaron has a contract with the Bulldogs, and so that's where he's playing as it stands. And, there's unless he doesn't have a contract with the Bulldogs and then he's free to look elsewhere, at this stage he's playing with the Bulldogs.
Would the club welcome him back?
We didn't ever want Aaron to leave, as you know.
Yeah.
And that is true. We really didn't want him to leave, and he's a highly valued member of our team. But you also would understand that we had to make some other decisions when he decided to leave us. And so, his position has been taken. That doesn't mean that we wouldn't entertain the idea if it was possible, but I can't tell you that it's possible. And certainly at this point in time, he is going to another club. He has a contract. And also within our club, we are genuine in saying that you know, it is Ivan's team. And so, you know, the board does not impose players on Ivan. It's Ivan's team, and he's had to make other decisions at this point. But look, you know, we've still got money in our cap, and we've responsibly managed around the indicative 9.1, 9.2 that the NRL came to us with earlier in the year. So we still have money. So let's see what happens next year. But you know, I don't want to entertain any rumours that Aaron will be staying, because at this point Aaron is going to the Bulldogs.
We thrive on rumours on this program, Marina. So unfortunately we will entertain them.
Right, you're a journalist. You know I'm a journalist too, so I understand.
Marina, appreciate your time this morning. Thank you for answering those questions, and good luck for the remainder of the year.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks,
Marina. Go there, chairperson. Now, speaking basically on behalf of all the chairpeople of the NRL clubs there, you know, they like to talk up, yes, it's a great time to be a player and all that sort of thing. It's a great time to be a club too, don't worry.
Where do you think Aaron Woods will be at?
Very interesting, Ray. I don't know. I tell you what, there's a little part of me that says he'll get that contract but won't be playing for Canterbury.
But
they'll be paying a bit of his money and he'll be playing still at the West Tigers. So let's see how that plays out. 13-53-53. We can only speculate.
Exactly.
That's what we do.
Our man Trent's on the line. Trent, good morning. Can I bring up Cutton and Hawthorne, Trent?
Of course you can, Ray. Good morning to you and Jimmy. And that was tough to watch last night, but enjoyable for yourself and many of the Carlton fans.
Yeah, I was channel surfing about four different codes last night. Rare win. Couple of games to finish off round 22 of the AFL. Trent, Melbourne versus Brisbane, St Kilda, North Melbourbne, Fremantle, Richmond.
Yeah, so they're the early 1-1-10 at the MCG. Melbourne should be winning and they'll lock up a finals berth. They're $1.12 against the Brisbane Lions at $6.50. The Lions 43.5, just the favourite option in the margin betting. You've got the Demons by over 39.5 at $1.75. The 3:20 match at Etihad Stadium, St Kilda, they've got a glimmer of making it. They're $1.28. North Melbourne, $3.70. The line 24.5. The favourite way for the margin betting is the Saints by under 39.5 at $2.20. And then the 4:40 match at Domain Stadium. Fremantle, $3.90. Richmond, they're still eyeing a top four berth. They're $1.26. The line's 24.5. And in the margin betting there, you've got the Tigers under 39.5 at $1.95. But a sensational match on Friday night, fellas. Adelaide against Sydney. And I remember seeing Buddy do that once in another Guernsey, but outstanding in the win there against Adelaide.
First and last time AFL will precede the NRL in these markets on this program. Anyway, that's what happens when Ray Thomas takes control.
No, I didn't. We were talking about Carlton Hawthorn. That was all.
No, get into the...
And okay. I was giving you the NRL.
Canberra versus Penrith. No one can believe that Penrith getting... Well, it was plus 6.5. What's
doing there,
what's the
Trent?
Story there, Trent?
4.5 at the moment. So just even it up in terms of the sort of $1.90 line with the 4.5. But I know that you're all surprised by the head-to-head prices. You've got Canberra $1.48 and Penrith $2.65. So 2 o'clock at GIO Stadium. You've got the Raiders by 13 plus $2.80. 1-12 at $2.90. The Panthers 1-12 at $3.75. By 13 or more at $7. And draw at the end of normal time 23. Jordan Rapana, the $7 favourite to score the first try, with Nick Kotrick at 9 and then Michael Oldfield at 10. And then 4 o'clock at ANZ Stadium, Herd's all but talking about this. Canterbury, they've been battered from pillar to post and who knows, they could cause the upset. They're $4.25. Manly, they need to bounce back after the losing in the dying seconds against West Tigers last week. They're $1.22. The line there is 10.5. Just in the margin betting, the Sea Eagles 13 plus at $2, by 1-12 at 3. The Bulldogs by 1-12 at $5, by 13 or more at 12, and the draw at the end of normal time at 26. Tom Trbojevic and Uwade, they're the $8 equal favourites to score the first try. And then you've got Dylan Walker and Matt Wright at $9.
And EPL, this is a big one. Tottenham up against Chelsea.
That's the biggest of the two tonight, Jimmy. Well, that'll be early in the morning at 1 o'clock at Wembley Stadium. Tottenham no longer at White Hart Lane. They've just got the year at Wembley Stadium before they go to the new ground. So you've got Tottenham $2.15, the draw $3.40, and Chelsea $3.25. And the earlier match at 10:30, you spoke about this earlier. This is Huddersfield Town against Newcastle United. So the two teams that were in the championship last season, Huddersfield Town $2.35, the draw $3.10, Newcastle United also $3.10. And fellas, I'll just quickly mention that Nick Kyrgios has just started his semi-final at the Cincinnati Masters against David Ferrer, and Kyrgios was the $1.37 favourite. So he's beaten Nadal in the quarterfinals, and if he wins this, he'd play Grigor Dimitrov in the final. That'll be in the early hours tomorrow morning, I'd say, ranging from 3 to 5 o'clock. o'clock. But plenty of sport there, plenty of racing as well. Arrowgate at 10:45, and then it's Tari Cup Day. You can check out the markets and plenty more at tab.com.au.
Good on you, Trent. And actually, speaking of Arrowgate, we'll go straight to Del Mar in California. Now, our man on the ground over there is Jason with him. Jason, good morning back home. Good afternoon in America. And Jason, is it unsportsmanlike of me to say we're pulling Arrowgate's tail this afternoon?
No, it's not unsportsmanlike at all. I'm doing the same thing. None of the Americans are enjoying it much at all. Well, going around saying Winks is the true number one now, but a lot of the Americans choose to differ.
How'd you get this gig, Jason? Is it a rot, isn't it?
He's a good man, Jason.
Not bad, Jimmy. I'll tell you what. It's been pretty good fun over here. I've been in the TVG studios with Candace Hare, who's the TVG international racing expert for the last two nights. So we've been broadcasting all of the Aussie races, including last night's meeting at Randwick. Yesterday's meeting at Randwick, so that was a lot of fun. And then out here at Del Mar today for the TVG Pacific Classic. So TVG doing a lot of work with us now at Sky Racing. We forged a bit of a relationship there, and I've been doing a little bit of work for TVG on a Saturday afternoon, a Friday night, of course, in the west coast of America, and seeing a lot more action at the Aussie racing. And this is a bit of a reciprocal, I guess, and out here at Del Mar to try and boost the turnover and the interest in American racing today. And what a facility it is here at Del Mar. I tell you what, I'm blown away by not only the race course here, we're right on the ocean, but also the hospitality and just the atmosphere. It's outstanding.
All jokes aside, Arrowgate, look, I know he was beaten first up, but we also know he's currently the world's number one ranked horse and is expected to bounce back today.
You there, Jason?
Yeah, I am, mate. Sorry.
Sorry. We're at $1.75, Arrowgate.
Yeah, he's got out a little bit. They put him up at $1.50 last night, tab.com.au. Of course, no fixed odds betting here, so plenty of people are hoping to get him even money, but I don't think they're going to. I think he's going to start a lot shorter than that. Look, it's about 50-50, the feeling over here in the States, about whether he can bounce back or not. Plenty think that it might have been just an aberration, his last start failure there at Del Mar when he was beaten in the San Diego Handicap. But he was really, really poor that day, beaten 15 lengths. Yeah. He was $1.05, or 20-1 on, as they say over here. And I tell you what, a lot of people don't think that he likes the Del Mar surface. It's a couple of runs here now, and the jury's just out on his work the other day as well. It was a little bit poor, but I think this is the biggest race of his life. Bob Baffert sitting in a handy position at the moment. I suppose he's really got to keep Arrowgate racing because the Breeders' Cup comes to Del Mar for the first time. It's run 3 days before the Melbourne Cup on the 4th of November, so he's really got to win today to cement his place as a real chance in that Breeders' Cup on the 4th of November. So his stablemate, Collective, I think, the main danger here, coming off a magnificent performance at Santa Anita and romping home in the Precisionist Stakes, a 14-length victory that day. The third horse in that race, Accelerate, he was the one that came out and won here the other day in the San Diego Handicap. So it's really stood up the form. So they look the main three in the race. But lots of interest today if Arrowgate can bounce back. In fact, probably more interest today than if he came out and romped in the San Diego.
Yeah, potentially. Arrowgate, $1.75. You mentioned Collected, $3.20. Accelerate, $4. That market there at tab.com.au. Strong vein of jealousy running through us here, watching you on the screen
on there.
Enjoy the spectacular Spanish cuisine in that part of the world, and we appreciate your time, Jason.
Good on you, Jimmy. Good on you, Ray. Have a good show. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jason.
Jason with him over there in the USA.
That race, Jimmy, 10:46 our time.
10:46 our time, and you can see that on Sky One. See that on Sky One. We'll take a break. We'll come back with a sports update with Tanya. And then, of course, we've got our legend of the game, Gregory Stephen Chappell.
After all the bad weather this year, the Tweed River Jockey Club deserves a cracking Moolambah Cup Day on Friday. And the locals deserve plenty of winners. Before all the racing action, don't miss Gary Cleese's selections. Friday morning at 10 on Sky Sports Radio.
Got more than one horse on your mind? Bundle all the runners you love in the one prize. And if any of them win, you win. Plus, combine your bundle bets into a multi and get even greater odds. And it doesn't just end at racing. Add your BundleBet racing legs together with all your favourite sports to create the ultimate multi. So place a BundleBet multi for more excitement, more runners, and more chances of winning today. Tab, we love a bet. Gamble responsibly.
Your business can secure some extra stock at a great price, but the banks say no.
You want it in time for a peak sales period, yet they still say no.
You need funds before the deal disappears, but they keep saying no.
Turn the nose around and get on with it with On Deck. Apply online in 10 minutes with just 3 bank statements, not the deed to your house. And you're on your way with the cash flow you need. Visit ondeck.com.au.
On Deck, the small business loan specialist. Loan subject to lender approval. On Deck partners with MYOB.
Be part of the action at the racing event of the season. Tyrrell's Lions Newcastle Spring Racing Carnival at Newcastle Racecourse. Friday, September 15 is Cup Day with our 4 most prestigious races, including Forex Gold Newcastle Cup, Australian Bloodstock Cameron Handicap, Spring Stakes and Yarraman Park City Stakes. Racing continues Saturday 16th with Ladies Day and Westfield Katara VIP Marquee. Don't miss the thrill, the passion and the fashion. Tyrrell Lions Newcastle Spring Racing Carnival. Book online, buy one general entry and get one free before Cup Day at newcastleracecourse.com.au.
On the Big Sports Breakfast Weekend with a sports update, here's Tanya Thomas.
Cronulla remain focused on the top four, recording a 26-16 win over North Queensland in the NRL game last night in Townsville. It was the Cowboys' third straight loss. The West Tigers showed lots of promise despite going down to the Roosters 22-18 in the match at Allianz. Coach Ivan Cleary says the rebuild of the West Tigers has begun. And Melbourne is the 2017 Minor Premiers, claiming the JJ Gildenen Shield with 2 matches remaining. The Storm claimed the title with a 44-12 win over Newcastle, taking them to 40 points, which is 6 ahead of second-placed Brisbane. Games today, Canberra host Penrith and Canterbury take on Manly. Despite a week of scandals, the all-conquering New Zealand rugby team came out firing in the first Bledisloe Cup match of the year against Australia at ANZ Stadium last night and piled on 40 points to 6 by half-time. The Wallabies staged a fight back in the second half, scoring 4 tries in half an hour, but it was almost as if the All Blacks had clocked off being so far in front. However, they ended up winning by 20 points, 54-34. Game 2 is next Saturday afternoon at 5:35 Sydney time, the match in Dunedin. Josh Kelly starred for GWS with a career-best 43 possessions in the Giants' 81-60 win over West Coast in the AFL match yesterday. Essendon 90 beat the Gold Coast 57. And for the first time since 2005, in fact in 4,495 days, Carlton has beaten Hawthorn. The Boo Boys beat the Hawks 77-70, ending any hopes the Hawks had in making the finals.
That seemed to be an extended review of that. Now, how did that get a start in there?
There were tears.
Oh, here we go. Anfield, the Beatles Museum, and now Carlton beating Hawthorn. There's tears.
I don't think there were tears last night. There were tears at Anfield. Yeah.
Were there tears last night, Tanya?
There was a wetness on the pillow.
Alrighty.
No. From a tear, we were watching it.
There
was a fist pump. There was a fist pump, yes, correct, there is. Manchester United had a 4-0 away win over Swansea in the EPL overnight, scoring their final 3 goals in the 80th, 82nd and 84th minute. In other matches, Bournemouth 0, Watford 2, Burnley 0, West Brom 1, Leicester 2-0 over Brighton, Liverpool 1-0 over Crystal Palace, Southampton 3, West Ham 2 and Arsenal went down to Stoke 1-0. Still in the UK, and ominous signs for Australia ahead of the Ashes this summer, with England thrashing the West Indies in the first test at Edgbaston by an innings and 209 runs. Alastair Cook top scored with 243. The world's best racehorse, Arrogate, puts his title on the line today, racing in a meeting at Del Mar in the United States, as we just heard, that race on Sky Sports Radio at 10:46. With Winx's amazing win yesterday, she is putting the pressure on for that number one spot. Meantime, American Pharaoh's little brother, St. Patrick's Day, will make his debut also at Del Mar, but that's in tomorrow morning's meeting. A verdict on the controversial safety car restart involving Scott McLaughlin and Shane Van Gisbergen in race 17 of the supercar race in Sydney yesterday is expected to be delivered later this morning. Meantime, qualifying for today's race 18 is at 11 o'clock. And as Trent mentioned, Nick Kyrgios in action in the semi-final at the Cincinnati Masters, taking on David Ferrer. Ferrer up 1-love in the first set. The earlier semi was won by Grigor Dimitrov over John Isner in a tight one. That was 7-6, 7-6. And boys, the US Open begins in a week from tomorrow. I hate to say, Kyrgios did receive some boos from the crowd. He was leading 3-love in the first set and he was up a double break. And he went for a shot between his legs. And the crowd kind of booed. Is that being a smart aleck, or is it disrespectful to... That was against Rafael Nadal.
That's just the way he plays, isn't it? That's
you know what?
Kyrgios.
Because he's popular with the younger supporters. And then if he didn't do that, we'd say,
Isn't tennis boring?
Because I remember in the old days, Henri Leconte, if he did something like that, everyone laughed.
Yeah.
But Kyrgios being Kyrgios, he gets booed.
Henri Leconte was a likable character.
That's right.
I do find it a tad disrespectful. And just quickly, Michael Leiner, former Wallaby, commentating on Sky Sports in Britain for the rugby match, said, "I can't overestimate how angry I am at seeing an Australian team who have skills that are non-existent. Mm. Passing and catching and making tackles and trusting the bloke beside you are pretty basic, even at schoolboy level. Australia had a month to try and create stuff, and they came up with that in the first half. Very, very disappointing."
He's nailed it. And that was the key. Some of that the passing in the back line was awful. The defence was horrendous. That's a national team.
Okay, David Pocock's missing. Were they missing any other... Like, they weren't really missing...
Pretty decent. Well, they had all the big names there apart from Pocock. So no excuse for that.
So if you start thinking about 2019 World Cup in Japan, they're probably never further away than now.
I know we're pushing for time, but I just liked what Steve Hansen said in regard to their sort of brain fade in the second half. He said, "We got seduced by the scoreboard."
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful?
It makes sense, doesn't it?
That summed it up, didn't it? Yeah.
Game was over for them. He's a quality coach.
Yeah. Quality coach. 1353-53, the open line number. We're taking a break, and then we're both excited. Mm. And we're getting ready for the return of... Not the return. The debut. And remember, when he debuts, he does pretty well. Gregory Stephen Chappell up next.
If you love your harness racing, you can rely on Sky Sports Radio. Tuesdays on the Pace brings you all the latest news, interviews and tips. Listen live at 10:30 Tuesday mornings or download the On the Pace podcast from skysportsradio.com.au.
Warrawee Needy was freakishly fast at 2:149.4. Warrawee Needy was faster still at 3. Warrawee Needy was the fastest horse in the world at 4:146.4. Warrawee Needy was one of the fastest and most exciting pacers of the last decade. Warrawee Needy, standing at Urabee Start in New South Wales. Visit urabee.com.au.
Gallo's pies are the best pies in Australia. They are my favourite pie. An all Australian owned and family operated business, Gallo's pies produce only the best quality premium pies. A magnificent range using only 100% lean Aussie beef, including Gallo's Junior Sausage Roll 12 packs, just perfect for that next birthday party, Mum. Gallo's pies available in all Coles and IGA stores, and if they're not there, please ask for Gallo's by name. At Gallo's Pies, we're thin on pastry, we're big on meat.
Listening to the Big Sports Breakfast Weekend, brought to you by Penrith Mazda, the BT50 experts. More than 300 new Mazdas in stock over 5 acres at Mulgoa Road, Penrith.
Yeah, welcome back to the program. Time now for our Legend of the Game segment, and I think we're both very excited about this one. He was the preeminent batsman of his generation and a name that sits very comfortably with the greatest Australian cricketers of all time. It's our great pleasure to welcome to the program Gregory Stephen Chappell. G'day, Greg.
G'day, guys. How are you?
Yeah, really well. Appreciate that. And look, before we start talking about your career, we want to touch a little on a new foundation that you've started, the Chappell Foundation, and the aim is to assist Australia's growing homeless population. What encouraged you to do that, Greg?
Oh, I think, you know, I've been involved in various charities over the years, but I was living in Melbourne for a few years, a couple of years ago, and living in East Melbourne, right next door to Fitzroy Gardens, and used to go into the gardens each morning for a bit of exercise, and I was really taken by the number of people that slept in the gardens overnight, and that was probably the beginning of it. And then when my friend Dacha Mater and I were talking earlier this year, late last year, about perhaps doing something in Australia. The latest charity that I've been involved with was the LBW Trust, which supports tertiary educated kids around the world. And I've always felt that I'd like to do something in Australia. So when we sat down to discuss it, I felt homelessness was a blight on the landscape for Australia, and would like to do something to try and help in that space.
Mm. Greg, if people want to get involved, this is a volunteer organisation, I should stress that.
Yes.
How do they go about doing that, Greg?
Well, the Chapel Foundation website is the best place to start. Obviously, as you say, this is a fully volunteer organisation. We want the funds that we raise to go to the cause, and would welcome anybody's assistance. The base is in Sydney at the moment, but we hope to expand it nationally over time. So anyone that wants to donate or would like to volunteer their time, please get in touch through the foundation.
Chapel Foundation is we'll give that website out at the end of the interview. Greg, let's talk a little around your cricket. We've spoken to your brother Ian previously, and we understand the family background and the history there with your father being a keen cricketer and, of course, your grandfather playing Test cricket. Was there ever any chance of not playing cricket in the Chapel household?
I don't think so. Yeah. I can't remember a moment in my life where we weren't involved in sport some way, but usually cricket. Cricket and baseball were the two major sports that Dad sort of pointed us towards, but we played Aussie rules football. I played some basketball, a little bit of tennis and golf and things like that. But cricket was always the sport. There always seemed to be a cricket bat around the house somewhere or a cricket ball, and things were being thrown one way or another all through the year.
Greg, you're a star cricketer at schoolboy level, and that natural progression to state level, and then eventually you achieved every young man's dream, and you get the baggy green, the 1970-71 Ashes Test Series against England. You get called up to play for Australia for the first time in Perth. You bat at number 7, and you score a brilliant century on debut, 108. I think Ian Redpath got a big 100 that innings as well. Can you take us back to that moment when first you got the call up, and then the day when things just went so well for you at the Wacker?
Yeah, I think I was travelling with the South Australian team at the time, and the manager of the team was the one that broke the news to me that I'd been selected in the Australian team, or the 12 for the first test in Brisbane, but I was 12th man in the first test. Obviously, Terry Jenner was preferred to me over me in the first test, but in Perth, obviously, spin bowling wasn't considered necessary, and so I played as an all-rounder, really, batting at 7 and bowling some medium pace. It's funny, I sort of dreamt all through my life of playing for Australia, and it still came as a bit of a shock when it happened. And I think I was in a bit of a fog when I went out to bat. We were in a bit of trouble, 5 for 107 or something, I think. Ian Redpath was the not out batsman, Paul Sheehan, had run himself out. Thankfully, I hadn't had to have the pads on for very long. I'd only just got the pads on when Paul managed to run himself out. So
I couldn't get nervous.
To get really nervous. But as I walked through the gate, I think I started to realise that this was a bit bigger than anything else I'd done. I was very lucky that Ian Redpath was the batsman at the non-strikers end, a very experienced test cricketer, a very competitive player, and someone, I think everyone that I played test cricket with would have killed for the baggy green cap, or would have died for the baggy green cap, but I reckon Redders and Rod Marsh were the two that would have killed for it. So Red wasn't giving his wicket away, and I don't know, and he's never really owned up when I've asked him. I reckon that he knew that he was the one that had to get through John Snow's spell at that stage, and I didn't really face much of John's bowling in that early part of the inning. And it was only a little bit later that when I sort of watched Redders battling against Snowy that I realised there was a real contest on here, and Redders wasn't giving his wicket away, so I better do my bit. And I think we put on about 180, I think, for that sixth wicket, which sort of steadied the ship a little bit. We didn't win the match, we didn't lose it, so maybe we had some part to play in that.
And you had your own history with John Snow too, because I believe you'd played with Somerset previously, and he'd actually struck you. You were trying to hook a bouncer, so there was a bit of history there between you and John Snow.
Yeah, there was, but that was probably a lucky thing, that I'd played some county cricket. I'd played against all the England bowlers at the county level, so it didn't seem quite so bad. And the match in which I got hit was a wet wicket. I went to play a pull shot. I'd gone past the ball. The ball sort of stopped in the wicket a bit. It actually hit the back of the bat and cannoned into my face, which wasn't a lot of fun. But, John, being the the great fellow that he is, he came and visited me in hospital overnight. So I think all of that sort of took the, anything that was might have been hanging over from that away, and I just saw him as a bowler, and a very good bowler he was. He gave us a lot of trouble in that series. Really strong shoulder action, bowled good short balls that were always seemed to be in under the armpit, and you had to deal with them. There was no evading them. And so he put us under the pump quite a bit in that series. Mm.
The following summer, Greg, was the Rest of the World tour of Australia, and some wonderful cricketers in that Rest of the World team. Is that where the now famous Chapel V came into vogue, where you tried to play your innings, especially early when you went into bat, just primarily through mid-off and mid-on?
Yeah, look, I think I'd always had in the back of my mind, playing pretty straight early in the innings. But in the early part of that summer, I'd scored that century on debut in Perth. I'd struggled in the next couple of test matches. I got a 60 in the final test match of the series in Sydney. I started the next season in pretty good form for South Australia, but, was not making any big scores. And I'd been 12th man in the first two test matches against the Rest of the World, and I'd played in a game down in Hobart. Ian and I had sort of represented the Australian 11, which was pretty much, nine Tasmanians and Ian and myself, against the Rest of the World. And again, I'd got a 20 and a 30 in that game. And I was back at the hotel, Hadley's Hotel in Hobart, waiting for Ian to go out to dinner when the fellow at the front desk called me over and said, "I've got a letter for you." And I realised from the handwriting that it was a letter from my father, and opened it. No mobile phones in those days. So the old snail mail was the only way. And inside the envelope was a cutting from the Adelaide Advertiser by the chief cricket writer of the time, Keith Butler, in which he'd given me a fair bit of a pasting for wasting my talent, getting starts, not going on with it. Quite a cutting article. And at the bottom of it, Dad had just written, "I don't believe everything Keith has to say, but it might be worth thinking about." So I told Ian that I wasn't hungry and I was going to stay in, and I went back to the room and I just sat down and I did think about it, and I thought about every game of cricket from the backyard through primary school cricket, all the way through Shield cricket to Test cricket. And what I realised was that there was a really distinct difference between the good days and the bad days. And I realised at that moment that it wasn't going to be something physical that was going to make the difference in my batting. It was really going to be my attitude and my mental skills that had to be developed. And I also realised from that session that, what I did in the good days was really just focus on hitting the ball back past the bowler early in the inning. Not so much that I was going to hit every ball down there, but mentally it kept me in a neutral position and stopped me thinking about hitting the ball through square leg or point or whatever. It just kept me in a neutral position, and that really made a difference. And the other part of it was that I realised that I had a mental routine on the good days, which I used to go through pretty consistently, whereas on the bad days I did it intermittently. So from that day I decided that I was going to work on that routine and just get myself to a point where I responded to each ball appropriately, and if I did that, I had to increase my chances of making runs.
Fascinating.
The Hadley Hotel in Hobart. Yeah. There you go.
The genesis of a transition.
Well, you mentioned about...
I'm not sure what room number.
Famous now, hotel. Greg.
Put a plaque up there and find the room. You mentioned about that, the mental approach to the game, but what about the physical approach? Is it true that Don Bradman actually spoke to you about something and there was just a change of the grip that helped with your cricket at that stage around about the same time as well, Greg?
Yeah, that was a little bit earlier. It was my second season for South Australia. I'd been picked as an 18-year-old. Had a reasonably successful first year. The Australian team was away in South Africa at that stage. Ian was out. He was in South Africa, so there was a batting spot. And luckily, I got some runs early in the club season, and they chose me. I got my first-class 100 during that season. Early in the next season, we were playing a game at Adelaide Oval, and Sir Donald Bradman was the chairman of selectors for South Australia at the time and for Australia.
Yeah.
He used to come into the dressing room each morning to talk to Les Fable, our captain, just have a cup of tea and a chat about things generally. Occasionally he'd talk to players, mainly the senior players. He didn't tend to talk to us younger players very much. But this particular morning, I was standing near the exit to the dressing room when Sir Donald was heading out, and there must have been a cricket bat in the corner of the room for autographing or something, and I picked that bat up, and I was just doing some shadow batting, and Sir Donald walked past, and for whatever reason, I just said, "Good morning, Sir Donald," and he stopped, and he turned, and he said, "Good morning," and he looked at me, and he said, "I'd change that grip if I were you," which was a bit of a shock to me. It wasn't what I was expecting.
Yeah.
I'd grown up with the top hand, the back of the hand sort of facing the bowler, so it was a strong leg side grip, but it wasn't particularly good for offside play, and that's what Sir Donald said. He said, "Look, you know, if you want to strengthen your offside play, I'd suggest that you change your grip." And I said, "What would you suggest?" And he said, "Well, you know, the grip that I use worked pretty well." And I said, "Well, what's that?" And he said, "Well, you can read it in my book, The Art of Cricket." And I said, "Well, I don't happen to have a copy of the book here." So I shoved the bat into his stomach pretty much and said, "Show me," which he did. And, you know, he had the two Vs, thumb and forefinger, sort of pretty much down the splice at the back of the bat. And he said, "Look, you know, it'll feel a bit strange because you haven't done it before, but I'd persevere with it because I think it will improve your batting. It won't hinder your leg side play, but it will help your offside play." And he turned to go, and he stopped, and he turned back, and he said, "By the way," he said, "I've given this piece of advice to one other player. He didn't take it, and he's no longer in the team." And he turned and walked out the door. So I grabbed Terry Jenner and Jeff Hammond. We were batting that day, and I think I was batting at five, so I didn't have to rush. So I said, "Could you come down to the nets and just bowl me a few balls? I want to just try something." And I went down and tried the grip out, and it actually felt quite good. I felt quite comfortable with it from the get-go. Mm. I went out and used it that day, and I used it every day of my career since then, and it was certainly the best piece of advice I'd got as an adult.
Oh,
but the interesting part of the story, at the end of that day's play, players from both teams were in our dressing room and a couple of the media guys, and I told the story of, you know, what Donald Bradman had said to me that morning, and one of the press guys from Adelaide tapped me on the shoulder, and he said, "Do you want to know who the other player was?"
Yeah.
And I said, "Yeah, I'd love to." He said, "It was me. It was Alan Shield, who played for South Australia and then gone on to be a journalist." So he was the one that had knocked back the advice and was no longer in the team.
Ignored the Don.
Wow.
Well, we've got a lot to thank
At your own peril.
Lot to thank John Bradman for as a cricketer, but we've also got a lot to thank Don Bradman for influencing Greg Chappell. 87 test matches, 7,110 runs, batting average of just under 54, 2,400s, top score 247, not out. Greg, it's almost a tough question to ask this, but Richie Beno once said that Greg Chappell's 131 not out on the Ashes Tour of 72 was one of the most flawless innings he's ever seen at test match level. Is that still your best knock at that level?
I think it's the one that I regard as my best innings in test cricket. Mm-hmm. As much for, you know, the mental aspect of it as anything else. I mean, that was probably the innings where you know, the routine that I was starting to develop really came to the fore, because it was a pitch that was pretty much in favour of bowlers. That was Bob Matthews' test match where he took 17 wickets on the boo. And it's a low-scoring game. And I think mentally and physically it was, you know, the innings where it all gelled, you know, pretty well together, particularly, you know, probably for the first time. And really confirmed in my own mind that, you know, that what I was working on was the way to go. But, you know, I think there were probably a couple of other innings I played during World Series cricket that I would rate equally highly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Best bowler faced?
Dennis Lilly was the best bowler I faced. I played a lot of first-class cricket against Dennis. He just gave you so few balls to score from. He bowled so many balls in the danger area. He asked the most difficult questions. Andy Roberts was probably the nearest thing to him, I think, in test cricket. Very wily. You know, it wasn't just about pace. They could both bowl quick, but it was more the variations and the subtleties that they and the way that they work batsmen out. You know, they could sum up a batsman within two or three balls and write, oh, he's a strong front foot player, or he's a strong back foot player, and work out a plan pretty quickly how to bowl to each individual. It wasn't just a matter of mindlessly running up and bowling. But, you know, John Snow, we talked about before, any bowler at that level is a pretty good bowler. But if I had to pick one bowler, Dennis would be the bowler. The other bowler that I think doesn't get much recognition through that era, because it was an era of pace bowlers, but Derek Underwood from England was a terrific bowler. Very hard to get down the pitch to, because he bowled at a quicker pace, more of a slow medium pace, but subtle variations. And if he got you on a wicket with a little bit of assistance, particularly a dampish wicket, he'd probably be the bowler I would pick to bowl for my life if you had a damp wicket.
Wow, here, left arm.
Yeah, there you go.
Quick one, Greg. I know you've been asked this many, many times. Do you regret that underarm incident in 1980?
Yeah, I regret it. Nothing I can do about it. Mm. It is what it is. It happened. It's hard to really describe, because it wasn't just about that day. There was a lot of frustration after World Series cricket about, you know, a lot of the things that we'd argued about before World Series cricket were a problem after World Series cricket, only they'd been added to by the bigger cricket program. Mm-hmm. You know, two touring teams, double test series, one day matches, double headers. We played all the Saturday Sunday games.
That's
you know, captaining two one day games in a row was much more demanding than a test match even. So there was a whole lot of issues that were going on around the ground. But, you've got to understand that the New Zealanders actually took it pretty well. And talking to Jeremy Coney a few years later, who played in that game, Jeremy said, that was probably the best thing that ever happened to New Zealand cricket. He said, you know, we had tried for years to get the New Zealand population behind the New Zealand cricket team, but they were more interested in the All Blacks.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, for years and years we'd tried everything, and in 30 seconds you solved the problem.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to look at it, isn't it? Greg, great to have a chat with you this morning. We've taken up a lot of your time.
Honour.
We do appreciate that. If you want to have a look at the Chapel Foundation, check out the website. It's thechapelfoundation.com. Do that if you're interested in helping Greg end homelessness in Australia. Really great to chat to you, Greg, and have a great Sunday.
Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks, Ray.
Thanks so much, Greg.
There he is, Greg Chappell, our legend of the game.
Wow. I'm getting better than that. Yeah.
That's such a storied career, but to have a couple of little snapshots about the story with Don Bradman and how he sat down in that hotel in Hobart to the Hadley Hotel, that's just incredible.
We need another hour there, Jim.
At least minimum hour. Minimum. By the way, go to a break and then we're going to come back with Scotty Foster.
Sky Sports Radio and Tabcorp would like to remind you donations can be made to the National Jockeys Trust at any time. The Trust assists jockeys and their families experiencing financial hardship. Next time you back a winner, go to njt.org.au.
For the best price and range on a new Mazda, go and see the man. Penrith Mazda, with 300 new cars in stock over 5 acres. Penrith Mazda VT50 Ute Centre with 50 utes on display. Let us package you a great deal. Grab a coffee and a bite to eat in our Cafe Zoom while your car is serviced. See the Mazda experts today. Penrith Mazda, 2016 Mazda Master Dealer, family owned and operated, Mulgoa Road, Penrith, MD18808.
Z&Z Jewellers has been a Hurstville institution for over a quarter of a century. And for over 20 years, they've been the source of the NRL's official watches, rings, pendants and cufflinks. So if you want the official watch of your NRL team, or engagement and wedding rings, corporate gifts, all types of remodelling and repairs, Z&Z's your place. See Z&Z at Westfield Hurstville, or visit znz.com.au.
Proud sponsors of the St George Junior Referees.
Royce runs onto it.
Listening to the Big Sports Breakfast Weekend, brought to you by Penrith Mazda, the BT50 experts. More than 300 new Mazdas in stock over 5 acres at Mulgoa Road, Penrith.
Yeah, welcome back to the program. Wow, top shelf legend today, fellas. Well done, another award-winning program. I love Sunday mornings anyway, but the BSB weekend is the cream. Oh, hang on, this is a bit over the top. Thank you, Paramat. Yes, Greg Chappell was a great get, and we do thank Darshak Mehta at the Chappell Foundation for helping us in
what
securing that interview. Yeah. Time now to set to Scotty Foster, but he's not online. So, hello, gentlemen. Go the Eels. Go the Wenny Magpies. By the way, the Wenny Magpies wristled yesterday after leading 24 points to 8 with 12 minutes remaining.
Benny.
Yes, they did. But you've got to tell you about a couple of deals going at Steve Foster and Sons Quality Cars. Just like this 2011 Mitsubishi VRX hatch, Raymond. It's bright blue and beautiful. It's a very appealing small car. It comes with air conditioning, power steering, power windows, ABS brakes, dual airbags, power mirrors, sports seats, sports body kits, rear spoiler, alloy wheels, fog lights, reverse sensors, and, of course, it has logbooks with a complete service history. It's unbelievably economical. It's both very safe and reliable. It's on sale for the listeners today. $6,990. And I reckon if you went in there today, you could twist their arm on that one.
They'd negotiate.
They would, absolutely. $6,990. Check it out on the website, Foster's Quality Cars, fosterscualitycars.com.au.
Don't forget to mention Sky Sports Radio, and you can receive a free 3-year warranty with any of their of our car purchases. They've also got great finance packages for anybody who needs any help with finance, Jim.
Yeah, fantastic. So go online, fosterscualitycars.com.au, or give them a call, 96375024, 96375024. As I said, Wenny Magpies, they're not out of the semi-finals, but they've made it very tough for themselves. They've got a big game against Penrith next week at Ringrose Park.
And one more question?
Yes, what is your question?
Okay, this is to win 2 tickets to entrance members to Rose Hill next Saturday.
All courtesy of the ATC.
How far did Winx miss the start by yesterday?
Oh, how far did Winx miss the start? 2 tickets to Rose Hill Gardens. Members tickets,
call
no less. Courtesy of the ATC. So call now about that. Let's go to callers now. That is correct, producer Jeremy, yes. Dave's on the line. G'day, Dave.
G'day, boys. How are you?
Yeah,
very well,
Dave.
Mate. What do you got for us?
I am Parks.
Lovely Parks.
Mate, my best moment was Michael Cronin retiring with Ray Price holding the shield.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yep.
Great day.
Are you a Parramatta supporter, Dave?
Oh, well, I grew up in Durringong.
It doesn't get much better than that for Parramatta supporters.
Lived in the shop office at Cronin before anyone knew him.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
What was he like? What was he like as a young bloke, Michael?
Yeah, oh, lovely. Well-mannered, everything.
Just yeah, right.
He remains
never,
the same.
Never any different later.
Yeah, no.
Still no different today.
86 grand final. Great day
yeah,
for Parramatta.
Yeah, and what about the Swannies coming back, shutting up those Melbourne people?
Well, how about the Swans? 13 wins from 15 games since going 0-6. They've only lost
twice. 100-1 to win the comp?
They only lost twice in that period. It was both to Hawthorn by less than a kick.
Yeah.
My referees, you'll remember, Jimmy, I think everyone's forgotten about him. I reckon they were Bill Harrigan's father. Mick Stone and
Mick
Kevin
Stone.
Roberts.
Yes,
Bilko.
Referees,
Bilko. Bilko. And Ray, what about Drackery's?
Yeah, very, very good horse, isn't he?
I was on him.
Well done, Dave.
Even
you've
better.
Had a good weekend.
Even better.
Oh, well, mate, I'm only a little punter, Ray.
Doesn't matter. Win's a win, Dave.
I still love the fun, but I don't. I love TK. Bet big and win big, but you also lose big.
Exactly, no.
Yeah.
Win's a win, Dave. Congratulations. Mate.
Absolutely, absolutely. Take everything TK says with a grain of salt, actually. And you can take more grains of salt tomorrow morning. Remember, they're on the program. TK and Slats back tomorrow from 5:30. You can listen to the boys on the BSP. Remember, coming up on Racing HQ, there'll be a Taree preview, Roman, with Gary Cleese, Mitch Manners. We'll do the Maruya preview. So we've got all that coming up very shortly on the program as well. Been a good show, Roman. Our witness in greatness has had a few more nominations here. Morning, boys. Great moments in sport. David Beckham banging home a free kick, bending it round the wall, and the keeper for the LA Galaxy at Homebush a few years back. As they say, there's nothing like being at the game. Cheers, Manly Man Owl.
Good point, yeah. The great David Beckham.
Yeah. Quick caller before we go.
Try to squeeze Graham in.
Okay, g'day, Graham.
Wallabies.
Hello,
Graham.
Georgie Gregan saving tackle on Wilson in the Wallaby All Black Test in the 90s, and Australia had a great win.
Were you there, Graham?
Yeah.
So was I.
When we could play the game.
1994.
When we could play it,
Zinzan Brook, I remember how good he was for the All Blacks.
Yeah, could drop a kick a goal too.
Yes, he could do anything as a number 8.
Yeah, yeah. And the other one was Richie Benno's captaining the Aussies in 1958. We got the Ashes back. I was there every day. Saw Norm O'Neill get 76, 77. David kept bowling. And he said to this guy from Melbourne, fling him in. That was Mecca. Later on, picked up a chucking.
Yeah.
I tell you, prize pack for Graham.
Great call,
He's
Graham.
Back some good memories.
Yeah, now, listen, I think what I saw on the telly, I think he missed the wings, missed by about four lengths. Missed the start.
Oh, spot on, Graham. But I think those tickets are gone. I think those tickets are gone. Sorry, Graham. You can't win it all today, Graham.
Yeah, but we'll get your prize pack out, Graham. That was fantastic.
Yeah, so we do have our winner there. And our winner is of those tickets to the ATC. Yes, Winks missed by four lengths that start. We've got our tickets to give away too, to the VMAX Theatre, courtesy of Prakash and the team. So that goes to John, who rang up and told us about all the issues around footy. It was
a good call. That was.
Yeah, it was a very good call.
A couple of big games this afternoon. Go the Panthers down at Canberra. Need to win this to lock in a top eight.